Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, mixed messages. The president undermining his own argument and his own White House, telling reporters he is considering a tax cut after multiple denials. Plus, breaking news. President Trump speaks with the NRA this afternoon. Is he completely backing down from background checks now? And President Trump claims ISIS has been defeated, but that is not what his Secretary of State is now saying. Let's go up front. Good evening, everyone. I'm Kate Baldwin in for Aaron Burnett. Out front tonight, Trump's recession fears exposed. The president revealing today he is considering new tax cuts as fears grow about a looming recession. Here he is from the Oval Office.
We're looking at various tax reductions, but I'm looking at that all the time anyway. Payroll tax is something that we think about, and a lot of people would like to see that. I've been thinking about payroll taxes for a long time.
So he has been thinking about payroll taxes a long time, so he says. Could have surprised a lot of folks, considering the White House has been putting out 24 hours of pushback on that very idea. Literally, about 3 hours before the president said that, his deputy press secretary said the opposite.
Is a payroll tax cut being considered?
It's not being considered at this time.
Got it. And that's on top of a statement from a White House official who told CNN yesterday something very similar, that cutting payroll taxes is not something under consideration at this time. They must be weighing very specifically on the at this time element of that conversation. Well, we now know that really is not true. But is this all now being discussed because of the warning signs in the economy? Here again is the president.
Whether or not we do it now or not is... It's not being done because of recession.
Really? That is some coincidental timing then, isn't it? I mean, if it's not about a looming recession, then what is it about? Tough to tell, considering the president has said over and over and over again that the economy couldn't be doing any better.
Last year, for the first time in a decade, the United States was ranked the most competitive economy anywhere in the world.
Yeah, I've made the economy so strong that nothing's going to stop us.
We have the number one economy on earth. Our country now has the hottest economy anywhere in the world.
Our economy is fantastic.
So something of an admission from the president on the whole payroll tax talk. But wait, there is more. Another admission about his trade war with China today.
Whether it's good or bad, short term is irrelevant. We have to solve the problem with China because they're taking out $500 billion a year plus. And that doesn't include intellectual property theft and other things, and also national security. So I am doing this whether it's good or bad.
Whether it's good or bad, tariffs, he now says, could be good or bad for the economy. That may well be as close as President Trump is going to get to admitting the reality of the impact of the tariffs, that they are impacting American consumers. Pamela Brown, out front, live from the White House for us. Pamela, just how concerned is the president and his team behind the scenes about the economy right now?
Well, Kate, despite this public-facing showing of confidence about the economy from administration officials, there are some concerns behind the scenes and discussions about ways to offset anxiety about an economic slowdown. The president acknowledged just this afternoon that payroll tax cuts are on the table. He said they have been for a long time, but he said it has nothing to do with recession fears. He even said recession is an inappropriate word. And while the White House is focused on drawing attention to wage growth and low unemployment, some of Trump's aides have grown concerned that the trade war with China could hurt the economy and even hurt Trump's chances for a re-election, even though Trump himself may not share those exact concerns. President Trump today shrugging off fears, as you just pointed out, Kate, of a short-term recession due to ongoing trade disputes with China, telling reporters he is negotiating with China whether it's good or bad in the short term. But let's not forget, President Trump and his campaign are banking on a strong economy for re-election, Kate.
That's absolutely right. All right, Pamela, thank you so much. Out front now, White House correspondent for American Urban Radio Network's April Ryan, CNN senior political analyst Mark Preston, and Washington Post columnist Catherine Rempel. Thanks, guys, for being here. April, this is the latest example of White House aides running with one thing, what they know to be true. I'm nearly not blaming them. And then the president contradicting them a moment later. Does that tell you anything, though, about how seriously the president actually is in considering a payroll tax cut here?
What it tells me is that they're not managing the message well. And that's one thing that this administration has been having a problem with since the very beginning. Basically, what this president is trying to do is trying to do two things. He's trying to assure Americans that they will have a decent economy. He wants to give them more money in their pockets so they can push it out into the economy and spend, possibly with a tax cut, payroll tax cut. And also, he wants to fix the economy. But he also wants to reassure his chances in the Oval Office for the second term.
Catherine, the president says the economy is going gangbusters. Then the president says he admits that he's considering a payroll tax cut or another kind of tax cut in order to juice the economy. Can both of those things be true? How do you square those two things together?
I think it is very challenging. You can either say the economy is the strongest it's ever been. You shouldn't worry, you shouldn't worry your pretty little face about a recession. Oh, don't worry, public.
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Everything's great. I mean, this is what he sent his whole economics team on TV, in a show of force over the last few days saying that. And yet they're also simultaneously saying, economy's great, but we need to do all of the things that we last did when we were worried about another Great Depression, right? He's calling for the Fed to cut rates, and not just once. Peter Navarro said that they should cut it by 75 basis points, which is like, look, reasonable people can disagree about where Fed policy should go, but that's an enormous difference from where we are now. They're calling for payroll tax cuts, which, again, we last did in the immediate aftermath of the Great Recession. And by the way, Republicans were against it then, but for some reason, when the economy's great, when unemployment is low, now they're saying it's time for that. So look, it's a fool's errand to try to make sense or to try and find any sort of consistency.
Do you believe
from this
though?
White House.
Do you believe though at all, Catherine, that he would be that he's? It's like a double negative that the president's talking about a payroll tax cut, but it has nothing to do with the looming recession.
Look, Republicans love tax cuts, whether the economy is good, whether the economy is bad.
That's a good point.
Historically, though, they are not fans of payroll tax cuts. Democrats are. I mean, these are tax cuts generally that, by definition, go to working people. They are on your payrolls, right? So in that sense, I guess it's possible. But you have to also remember that Larry Kudlow is on the record. Larry Kudlow, his National Economic Council director, is on the record. Lots of tweets. Go search Twitter for this, saying that he thinks the payroll tax cut from 2010 was, and 2009, 2010, somewhere around there, was wasteful, didn't do anything to stimulate the economy, what have you. So I don't know that this is something that his core economic team actually wants. I don't know that this is something they'll actually pursue.
One thing that is consistent, maybe the only thing that's consistent in this, Mark, is that the president has insisted repeatedly that he is not worried about a recession. Listen here.
I think the word recession is a word that's inappropriate. We're very far from a recession.
I don't see a recession. I don't think we're having a recession.
Look, being optimistic is one thing. And I heard, when Larry Kudlow says, don't be afraid of being optimistic, I do hear that. But how politically troubling are recession fears for President Trump and re-election?
Well, the fact that you have the president of the United States actually uttering the word recession and then pushing back against it, that in itself is a losing day for him because he's having to address something that he doesn't necessarily want to address. You know, it doesn't have to be a recession for him to be hurt politically. If you go back and look at the polls right now, his strongest attribute right now is what he does on the economy. But it's still below 50%. Now, could you imagine if the economy slows down a little bit and some of that support that he has, that soft Republican support that he has, people that are happy that they're able to put money in their pockets, that they have jobs and what have you, but they don't necessarily like him personally. If you start to see an economic slowdown, that's when there's going to be issues. That's why you're seeing them talking about doing this this type of tax cut right now. Why? Because it's a populist tax cut. People all want more money in their pockets. But as everybody on the panel can tell you, when you take money out that way, you are then taking money away from the likes of Social Security, or you're also contributing to the debt right now, which is now staggering us.
There are no deficit hawks left in Washington. I just will say that every day until I am proven otherwise. April, this is far from the first time that the president has contradicted top aides publicly. We were just kind of taking a walk down memory lane, and two examples kind of stuck out. Why he fired James Comey as the FBI director, and of course, then there is the travel ban. Listen.
This had nothing to do with Russia.
Regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey. I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story.
First of all, it's not a travel ban. What it is to make sure that the people who are coming in are vetted properly.
It is not a travel ban, but then Trump tweets the following. People, the lawyers and the courts can call it whatever they want, but I am calling it what we need to and what it is, a travel ban. I love a walk down memory lane because it really says it makes a statement about where we are today. Is this a driving force behind why they are not holding any briefings anymore?
Yes. And you know, I got a clue into some of this from a White House person who's in the communications department. It said, look, the president basically directs all of this. He will tell when Sarah was there, he would tell Sarah when she could or when she couldn't have a briefing. And they said that he would say on some of the worst days, he would say, have a briefing. We need to have a briefing. But we're in some of the worst days. And he's not having a briefing. It's been a long time. I've lost count. I don't even know how long it's been since we've had a briefing, but we need a briefing. This president feels that he is the messenger, but we also need to hear these ideas that the president throws out with his knee-jerk reactions. We need to hear them flushed out. That is one reason he can say something or tweet something. We need to hear the reasoning behind it, how it impacts the American public or impacts the world. We need to know what's going on. The president will give you a piece of it, but we need to know the rest. There's a need for the briefing, but the president, I guess he feels he's his own mouthpiece now, and he is not managing the message well. He's going against his own administration officials, so they need to have a briefing to explain the explaining from the president.
I'd love to get from both of your perspective, Catherine and Mark, on kind of what sticks out to me, because when contradictions abound, say one thing about the economy, contradict yourself on the economy, mixed messages all over the place, Mark. Does this matter? I shout once again into the vacuum, though.
No, you're shouting into the vacuum. And honestly, right now, it doesn't matter. And it really goes back to the first question we're talking about. If the economy continues to do well, then Donald Trump is in a good position to win re-election. I mean, that's the bottom line. You go and talk to people out there, you know, outside of Washington, D.C., guess what? They don't care about his moral failings. They don't care about his lies. What they do care about is the fact that they have jobs and that they see an economy moving along right now.
Catherine?
So I would say I think it absolutely matters if the economy goes south, because if we cannot trust anything coming out of this White House, and right now we've been there basically since day one when Sean Spicer went out there and lied about crowd size. But if we can't trust what the president is saying, if we can't trust what his advisors are saying, whether they're trying to inspire confidence about the economy or telling us about what their solution is for dealing with it, that credibility is a major vulnerability, right? I mean, if you can't trust the White House to have competent personnel and coherent policy, then why should anybody have any trust that we would ever get out of the hole of a recession?
It matters on a good day. It really matters
exactly
if we dip even short of a recession, when we're in an economic downturn.
Yes,
that's a great point, Catherine.
Thanks,
guys. Really appreciate it. Out front for us next, we have some breaking news. President Trump and the NRA speaking this afternoon. Are universal background checks, expanded background checks, completely off the table now? Plus, President Trump coming to Russia's defense as he pushes a new claim as to why Russia was pushed out of the G8.
Putin outsmarted him. President Obama thought it wasn't a good thing to have Russia in, so he wanted Russia out.
President Obama's former defense secretary will respond. And are you seeing double? You are not alone. Jeannie Mose on the woman who had everyone, including Elizabeth Warren, doing a double take. Breaking tonight, President Trump on the phone with the head of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre, this afternoon. Trump's message, according to The Atlantic, universal background checks are off the table, though some White House officials are pushing back on that. The president publicly supported background checks and the expanded background checks in the days after the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton that killed 31 people. But tonight, CNN is learning folks in the White House, from Capitol Hill, and outside groups have all been pressuring the president to turn away. That may be exactly what is behind this change in tone.
We have very, very strong background checks right now, but we have sort of missing areas and areas that don't complete the whole circle. And we're looking at different things. And I have to tell you that it is a mental problem. And I've said it 100 times. It's not the gun that pulls the trigger. It's the person that pulls the trigger.
Out front now, Rob Astorino, member of President Trump's 2020 reelection advisory council, and Ayesha Moody Mills, Democratic strategist and CNN political commentator. Thank you guys for being here. Rob, is the president caving to the NRA?
No, I think it's typical. Any president, like President Obama, would talk to Planned Parenthood when an abortion issue came up. This is advocacy. And there are 5 million people that are members of the NRA, many more millions, tens of millions, who are gun owners who are not members of the NRA, who have serious concerns about where we might go. The slippery slope is a real issue. It's not even hidden anymore because the Democrats, just even a couple of years ago, were saying, no, we're not coming after your guns. Now they're outwardly, we have presidential candidates outwardly saying, yes, we're coming after your guns. We want mandatory buybacks, which is confiscation. And so there are some serious issues on the table.
What we're talking about right now is background checks, though.
But background checks would not have prevented just about 90% of these mass shootings.
Nothing prevents 100% of the time.
People are screaming, do something.
From some Republicans on Capitol Hill, that if it does something, it's a good thing after what they saw in El Paso and Dayton.
We've had 20,000 or so gun laws right now, all common sense gun laws on the books, none of which have prevented these because they're isolated. They're done by deranged people. And when you have good Americans, which is 99.99% who are gun owners.
And 99.99% would pass those background checks, don't they?
Yeah.
Aisha, what do you do with it?
Precisely. What we have is a situation where thousands of people have been murdered at the hands of gun violence. And we're having a conversation right now where the president is literally caring more about the $54 million or so that the NRA spent on his campaign that he hopes that they're going to spend again for his reelection, and getting into bed with them and hugging guns as opposed to hugging people. I think this entire conversation is really a testament to the character of this clown that's in the White House, who literally does not care about lives and does not care about people and cares more about this quote-unquote advocacy, but this lobby that's frankly a lobby of death at this point. Because when you cannot see clearly that just doing something, many Republicans are saying, let's do something to at least try to mitigate lives lost. Let's do that. Let's try to mitigate lives lost. And the president's like, well, we already got some policies on the books. To me, it just goes to, at this point, a conversation we should be having about the moral compass of this White House, which is just completely lacking.
Specifically, I'm very curious, though, what changed? Because just days ago, we heard from Donald Trump that, here's one quote, I think we can bring up background checks like we've never had them before. I think Mitch McConnell's on board with them. I think we can do something about it. The president said that. How else are people supposed to see this other than he speaks with the NRA a bunch of times and now he's changed his position? Look, the landscape has not changed. The only thing that we've this is the only thing that we've seen change.
Well, the landscape in 2009 when
I'm talking about right now.
No,
talk about right now. Stay here. Stay.
Today. We're talking about today.
No, because you just said
about.
It's a death lobby and Republicans are gripping. When the Democrats,
that is inflammatory as well. There are a lot of people.
And when
that
the Democrats controlled in 2009 the White House, the Senate, and Congress with a filibuster proof, why didn't they do all these things? Why didn't they?
The question is, we're talking about today.
We had mass shootings back then, too. So why didn't they do anything when they had the votes?
Missed opportunities. But answer my question.
People say do something. Do something that will work. We know this will not work.
Let's go back to the question
about... You do not know that.
All these would have passed their background checks.
Let's go back to the question at hand, which is why the president is flip-flopping. The fact of the matter is that every time there's been a shooting, the president of the United States has claimed that, oh, yeah, background checks. Mind you, he came into office and essentially rescinded the background checks that the Obama administration had tried to move forward. But again...
That would have put more restrictions on people with mental illness.
Right. He actually dialed that back in executive order. So again... Every time there's a shooting, the president says one thing. Oh, yeah, we're going to do something. thing that gets on the phone with the NRA and flip-flops. So the question becomes, and we just watched the president say, oh, it's a mental issue. Is it a mental issue when
not?
You believe something one day and then you decide the next day to change your tune over and over and over again? I think we need to get to the heart of the matter of why Donald Trump can't seem to form an opinion and keep it, especially when it comes down to the well-being of the American people.
Okay. Is it not a mental issue? Because
he's flip-flopping?
No. Every time it's brought up right now that it's not
that
a mental health issue.
That gets to the red flag.
No. And I think most people are in favor of red flags if it's done correctly. And there's also
lots
a slippery slope on that.
Lots of states have done it already.
You're making up slippery slopes and caveats as a way to do nothing.
Oh, really? Just
and
like abortion?
That is where we are. That is where
you,
we are.
Do you, if this is the president's position now that universal background checks are off the table, without his support, do you think that this effort is dead before it even began when they get back to Congress? Effort.
You know, Mitch McConnell has proven that he doesn't really want to move much. But honestly, I think that there's a groundswell in America right now. I think that the American people are tired of the doublespeak. I think they're tired of the cowing to these powerful lobbies. And I think that the American people want to see some movement. To me, what's going to happen when folks get back is they're going to be looking at the Senate landscape and elections, and they're going to be looking at what's happening on the ground. And I think that Republicans at this point are tired of people dying. They're tired of people dying who are in their districts, who are close to their districts, and they feel an urge to do something. Now, the question becomes, what is the something?
Right.
But I do think that people are feeling some motivation, which is why it's quite infuriating that the White House is not exercising any leadership here.
Well, we also had over 312 people so far this year in Chicago die by gun homicides.
Stop trying to make it
seem
like
last weekend in Philadelphia they went wild and they had gun deaths all over the place. Why aren't we talking about that? Why aren't we having vigils there? Why aren't we
talking about all of it?
No,
I've got to tell you guys,
would that have prevented?
Super tired.
Would that have prevented?
We can debate a million things.
But would that
have prevented? What I would like to say, stop asking me questions. Well, I'm going to ask the question. I get really tired when I ask a question. You guys keep trying to change it to another topic. We can talk about Chicago tomorrow. Right now, I'm talking about how President Trump has backed down from something that he promised and something
promise.
That he wanted.
He suggested.
And not even close to suggested. We can get it, and he says Mitch McConnell wanted it. If he was making that up, maybe. But that's what I'm asking right now, is if he's changing his position, why he's doing it instead of talking about Chicago.
No.
That's what I want to
Because
ask.
It's all tied in. It's all tied in. If you have universal background checks, would 312 people not be dead in Chicago this year? Because gangbangers are going to look up on Google where they should
one life, Come saving on. One life because a background check would keep someone from getting a gun, that doesn't matter?
It does, but that also would be, then why don't we just take everyone's gun away? Because that would cure the problem, right? Right?
Rob, that is not what I'm saying right now.
One death would be saved. One death would be saved if we took away every gun.
I hope the NRA is paying you well because you guys sit here and you parrot these talking points.
They're not paying me at all.
And the reality is that I haven't heard you once express any empathy for the people who are victims of gun violence.
I just brought up people in Chicago and Philadelphia. And of course,
not once suggesting that we should do anything to figure out how to stop gun violence.
But every time mental illness is brought up, the left goes, oh, no.
That's not true. It was actually
absolutely.
The left that has talked so much
American Psychological Association's come out against it. Don't, no, because now we are putting a bad reputation on people with mental illness.
Why is your president a flip-flopper? I mean, I think that's really the question. What does he believe? What is he going to do?
Again, we didn't get it anywhere in that tonight. Out front next, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo saying ISIS is now getting power. So what does that mean for all of the president's claim the terror group has been defeated? Plus, her Republican group just endorsed President Trump, so she quit. She joins me next. Tonight, mission not accomplished. A sobering new assessment tonight from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo acknowledging that ISIS is resurging.
Is it gaining strength, in your opinion?
It's complicated. There's certainly places where ISIS is more powerful today than they were 3 or 4 years ago. But the caliphate is gone, and their capacity to conduct external attacks has been made much more difficult. We've taken down a significant risk. Not all of it, but a significant amount.
More powerful than they were 3 or 4 years ago. That certainly is a stark contrast from what you've heard from President Trump.
We have won against ISIS. We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. When I was elected president 2 years ago, ISIS was all over Syria and all over Iraq. We've wiped out ISIS in Iraq. We've wiped out ISIS.
wiped out ISIS. The caliphate, maybe. The ideology, definitely not. According to this new report, and it's a lengthy report, the Pentagon's independent watchdog, ISIS has an estimated 15,000 fighters in Iraq and Syria now. A resurgence. That is how the inspector general puts it, including targeted assassinations, ambushes, suicide bombings. Like this attack at a wedding in Kabul, Afghanistan over the weekend, a suicide bomber killing 63 people, men, women, children, injuring nearly 200 more. Out front now is former defense secretary and CIA director under President Obama, Leon Panetta. Mr. Secretary, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, Kate.
Thank you so much. So roughly an estimated 15,000 ISIS fighters in Iraq and Syria now. Secretary Pompeo saying there that in some ways the terror group is stronger than it was 3 or 4 years ago. How big of a concern should this news be for Americans?
It should be a very serious concern for the president of the United States and for our country. Because his first responsibility is to protect our country. And we learned from 9/11 the fact that these terrorists have one fundamental aim, which is to attack the United States and attack countries in the West. And now what we're hearing is that ISIS is clearly remobilizing to the tune of almost 15 to 18,000 that are mobilizing into secret cells, that are mobilizing into attack teams. They're conducting not only attacks, but kidnappings and assassinations and bombings, as we saw in Afghanistan. So this is, in the end, a national security threat that the United States cannot simply stand back and pretend is not there.
Well, that's why I'm curious. I mean, recall very clearly, I mean, you were even critical of President Obama's handling of the Syria crisis, saying that the withdrawal from Iraq allowed for a vacuum that ISIS could fill and flourish in. If President Trump does nothing here, what will happen?
Well, history is pretty clear. We should have learned that lesson when we withdrew all of our forces from Iraq. And into that vacuum, ISIS created the caliphate that was the size of Great Britain and controlled almost 12 million lives. We had to then redeploy our forces to both Syria and Iraq in order to get rid of that caliphate. If we simply withdraw our forces and pretend that ISIS and the remnants of al-Qaeda are no longer a threat, make no mistake about it. It is an open invitation to terrorists to establish the kind of base from which they can conduct attacks against the United States. We can't let that happen again.
Well, Secretary, that's a terrifying proposition because that's under consideration. That's a real conversation that's happening right now is will troops be leaving Syria? How long will troops be in Afghanistan, where ISIS is now very clearly becoming a threat there as well?
I think the president has to be very careful here about going ahead and promising that somehow we're going to pull back all of our troops from that region without having any assurances that ultimately this problem will be dealt with. He says, let others deal with the problem that we've got. We're 7,000 miles away. But that has always been a false promise by isolationists. They used that argument in the 1930s that said that because of our oceans, we didn't have to worry about Nazi Germany. And today we're saying that somehow we can withdraw and be able to be protected. We are not protected in a global world with a global threat from ISIS and from terrorism. Yeah. We have to worry that ultimately if they mobilize, their next target will be an attack on the United States.
Secretary, President Trump said today, he was asked about the tensions in the South China Sea. I would like to play for you what was said.
From China, there is a new study out of Australia that suggests with the current Chinese military posture in the South China Sea, Indo-Pacific region, it could wipe out most U.S. bases within a number of hours. Is that something that keeps you up at night?
Well, nothing keeps me up at night.
Honestly, set aside the South China Sea right now. Should something keep the president up at night?
Well, let me put it this way. I think most presidents would be kept awake by the concern that our national security could be threatened. And, you know, it just, I think the indication that this doesn't represent a threat to our country is something that we shouldn't be hearing from the president. Look, we live in a dangerous world. Right. I think it's more dangerous than ever today. It's not only the threat from China and Russia, it's the threat from ISIS, it's the threat from Iran, it's the threat from those that are conducting cyber attacks against our own country. There are a lot of flashpoints in the world that ought to, very frankly, keep this president awake and concerned.
You mentioned Russia. Russia seems to be receiving at least some welcome news today. The president offering his endorsement of bringing Russia back into the G7, which would then be the G8. Listen.
Putin outsmarted him. President Obama thought it wasn't a good thing to have Russia in, so he wanted Russia out. But I think it's much more appropriate to have Russia in. If somebody would make that motion, I would certainly be disposed to think about it very favorably.
I just want to give you an opportunity to respond to the president, what he said there about President Obama.
You know, I would say to the president that at least President Obama was aware of the threat that Russia constituted to this country. I do not get the impression that this president is aware that Russia is an adversary. And before he starts inviting Russia to join the G8, ought we not to get something back from Russia? Ought we not to know that Russia is not going to attack our election system in 2020? Shouldn't we know that Russia is not going to continue to be aggressive in the Ukraine, in Syria, in the Middle East, and elsewhere? Shouldn't we get something back with regards to the nuclear threat that Russia constitutes today? I don't know what the president is saying in the sense that he's basically saying he's inviting Russia to be a part of the G8 and is getting nothing in return, as far as I can see.
Yeah, especially since Russia was kicked out because of the annexation of Crimea, and we see how that's going right now. Secretary, thank you so much for your time.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. Out front next, one Republican cuts ties with an organization after it backed President Trump, saying she wouldn't be able to look her kids in the eye. She is my guest. Plus, if the economy slows, will Trump voters stick by the president?
Would you vote different?
Not necessarily, because I think the economy is always up and down.
Tonight, President Trump honored, or at least he says he's honored, having received the endorsement of the Log Cabin Republicans, a conservative LGBTQ advocacy group. Listen to this.
I was very honored to receive it. No, I've done very well with that community. Some of my biggest supporters are of that community.
But one member of the group's board is not supporting the president and is protesting the endorsement. Jennifer Horn writing in her resignation letter the following: in order to maintain favor with this unprincipled, unscrupulous president, too many in our party are fast abandoning the moral high ground. I could never endorse him for president of the United States and still look my children in the eye. Out front now is Jennifer Horn. She's also a former chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party, and she recently served as campaign manager for Bill Weld's primary challenge against President Trump. Jennifer, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Were you surprised when you heard that from President Trump today?
Not particularly. In fact, that statement is exactly goes to the heart of what is the problem with this endorsement from the Log Cabin Republicans to begin with. Of course, the president's going to take it and use it to advance his own political and personal agenda without ever having earned it. And that's my problem with this endorsement, is that this president has not earned the support of an esteemed organization that has spent 40 years fighting for equality and inclusion for all Americans. I have a tremendous amount of respect for the people on this board, for the people that I was privileged to work with, but this endorsement was given without any sort of earning on the part of the president, and I think it's a big mistake.
You were clear why you were stepping down. Was there one? Was it one thing, Jennifer, in particular, that you just could not stand behind?
No, it really wasn't any one thing, frankly. You know, folks who know me know that I have been speaking up against this president. Honestly, since 2011, I wrote my first op-ed when he came to New Hampshire to kind of dip his toes in the water of the 2012 race and was scared off by Mitt Romney at that time and didn't decide to run. You know, Donald Trump is not an advocate for equality. He is not an advocate for inclusion for the LGBTQ community, frankly, or anyone else. He is a terrible example for our children. He stands for everything that my husband and I have taught our children to fight against. And there is no world where I could possibly endorse Donald Trump or have my name be associated with an organization that does.
In announcing the endorsement, the heads of the organization wrote in an opinion piece. And at the very end, they wrote something that I found striking and I wanted to ask you about. They wrote, "To be treated equally, fairly and justly under the law is our goal. And we know that inclusion wins is a mantra we share with the president." That is what they are writing. But I mean, is that does the entire board agree other than you?
The entire board doesn't agree there. And we went through a process under our bylaws when it came to the endorsement. And there were a number of us, a handful of us who voted against it. I'm not the only one who has resigned. I'm the only one who has, you know, kind of come forward to discuss it publicly. The entire board does not agree with that. And I think, unfortunately, it was an unfortunate line for them to use in that because it's just so obviously untrue. When you hear this president talk about women, when he talks about Muslims, when he talks about, you know, any individual or group of individuals, immigrants, you know, the folks at the border, the children of these families who are trying to come across the border. The president does not talk about an inclusive America. He does not talk about an America where everyone is treated equally under the law.
Jennifer, just real quick.
I think that was a bad line, unfortunately.
Just real quick, Rick Grenell is a member of Log Cabin Republicans. He's the president's ambassador to Germany. He says he's the highest ranking gay member of the president's administration. His position, Rick being there, does that mute your criticism?
Right. So I'm sorry, does that what? I think Rick Grenell's doing a great job. I think he's qualified for the job. I think that when you advance the best person for the job, that's kind of the lowest bar that we expect the president to meet. And certainly the president deserves credit for having you know, stayed with Rick when they were trying to slow roll his, I think when the Democrats were trying to slow roll his confirmation. He's the right guy for that job. Mm-hmm. But this president has been so wrong on so many other issues. When you look at trying to roll back protections for transgender students, for transgender people in housing, the transgender military ban, there are so many times when this president has been wrong. And let's not forget, by the way, that when he was our nominee in 2016, he chose not to try to remove the language in our party's platform that targets the LGBTQ community.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so
much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Sorry, there seems to be a delay. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Out front for us next, as recession fears loom, will voters still back the president?
We're on a high right now, and if we go belly up, I think it's going to be a big, big difference.
And Jeannie Mose on Elizabeth Warren running into her twin in a twin city. Tonight, 200 steel workers in Michigan are being laid off. It comes 1 week after President Trump touted at a rally that the steel industry is, quote, thriving. Martin Savage is out front.
Scranton, Pennsylvania, home to the sitcom The Office,
ta-da,
the birthplace of Joe Biden. In a state where white working class voters helped propel Donald Trump to victory. And if he hopes to win again, Trump's chances may hinge on those same voters and the economy. So I'm here asking people, how is the economy? And I'm getting two very different answers.
Yeah, I think things are definitely good. There's more jobs in the area. The stock market's really high.
I think we're on the verge of a recession.
I quickly pick up on a theme.
How are you feeling about the economy?
I'm feeling optimistic.
So if I asked you, how's the economy, you say,
have some concerns.
How people view the economy here is directly related to how they see the president. Jessica Stotzman owns Diskin Saloon, and she's a huge Trump fan.
Did you like the fact he was a businessman?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that was one of the biggest things. I feel the country has become like a business.
Criminal defense attorney Paul Walker is definitely not for Trump, and he sees trouble ahead.
And if this economy turns like I think it's going to, then it's going to turn on him.
Scranton's a factory town. Nationally, manufacturing jobs numbers are the highest they've been in a decade, according to the Department of Labor. But there are signs hiring and production are slowing. Bad news for manufacturing workers, a key part of the president's base. People like Trump voter Douglas Waltrip, an electrician. Economic forecasts suggest dark clouds, but he sees only sunshine where he works.
We got more work than we know what to do with right now.
Really?
Yes.
I ask another key question. Would voters stick with the president if the economy turns negative? Union rep Joe Labaranti, a Democrat who voted for Hillary Clinton, doesn't think so.
We're on a high right now, and if we go belly up, I think it's going to be a big difference.
While Trump voters say even if the economy turns bad, they would still back the president.
Right now, yes.
Would you vote different?
Not necessarily, because I think the economy is always up and down.
Another question that I asked these voters was, is there any Democrat that they might possibly consider, believing they'd say Joe Biden? After all, he is from here. No, it wouldn't bite. In fact, they say Joe Biden is too progressive. Kate?
Wow. Statement of where we are right now. Great stuff, Martin. Thank you. Out front next. Can you tell who's the real Elizabeth Warren? It may be hard to keep track of all the Democratic candidates out there, especially when there are duplicates. Here's Jeannie Mose.
Meeting her doppelganger is one thing Elizabeth Warren didn't have a plan for.
This is just like being here with family.
Yeah, your twin. Stephanie Oyen has dressed up as Elizabeth Warren for Halloween, so when she got ready to attend Warren's Minnesota rally...
I thought I would just put on the blazer, go to the rally, and get a couple little giggles.
But instead of giggles...
People just started turning. Oh my God, it's Warren. It's Warren. It was really touching to see the number of people who had tears in their eyes. They had said things like, you're my hero. I felt terrible having to tell them that I wasn't the real Elizabeth Warren.
She herself is a huge Warren supporter.
Warren! I talk with my hands, so I'm sitting there going, I'm not her, I'm not her. And of course, I look exactly like her.
Let's see you transform back into Stephanie. She takes off her prescription glasses, ditches the blue blazer.
I will also add, I'm 20 years younger than Elizabeth Warren, but maybe that doesn't show.
When Warren finished her speech, Stephanie got in line for the meet and greet, selfie-taking time. What happens when you meet the real Elizabeth Warren?
She looked at me and kind of looked at me up and down and said, she pointed at me and said, we need to talk.
And that was it. No discussion of their resemblance, though Stephanie was called back for a second photo for the senator's staff. Can you put Elizabeth Warren back on? Must be nice to be able to transform yourself into one of your own.
This is like watching, you know, Clark Kent.
Superheroes. Jeannie Mose, CNN. New York.
They really do look a lot alike. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. AC 360 starts now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.